You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Guideposts. We're at like episode 7035. Because we are constantly busy and involved in way too much trying to save the world, I actually think it still says like season two. So we are in maybe a 475,000 episode season. But nonetheless, we have lived through many episodes, laughed, cried, smiled, cheered together. And we are back to chop it up on everything advocacy within the lens of a whole bunch of Atlantic fish that we know and love. Before we kick this off, I do want to give a little bit of a shout out to our friends down at Captains for Clean Water, who I personally am a big supporter and advocate of, as are many of our guides up and down the coast. There's a really, really concerning campaign that they have going on right now about a bill that is going to the Florida Senate and House that would essentially financially punish citizens, nonprofits, and journalists for speaking out about agricultural practices. And while we're not going to get into all the weeds of the fight going on right now, on this specific episode, many of y'all know Benny and Daniel and other members of the of their organization that have stopped on the Guidepost, supported fisheries campaigns, and shared, compare notes upon advocacy and all sorts of great stuff. So many great people over there, and they're fighting a fight. It gets really scary when, Tony, I'm sure Tony's thinking right now, like, what if you could be sued for speaking up about your own public safety and
actually, no, dude, I'm putting on some Mel Gibson blue Braveheart paint and grabbing my kilt and bagpipes, and we're marching on Florida because this is First Amendment shit. I mean,
yeah, that should be the basics. You should be able to say that something is not good for a specific reason and speak up for yourself. And if that becomes illegal, not only would it become illegal and you could be sued to do so, but if you are sued and you lose, you would be held liable for their lawyer fees.
Hundreds of thousands of brave young men have died to protect our right for civil discourse. And that is, frankly, it is something that is worth dying for. And, it's unbelievable. You can't even comprehend that one group of people can have so much money that they can exert their will on a state legislature to do something clearly illegal and anti-First Amendment. I don't care who you are. I mean, no, you cannot yell fire in a movie theater. No, you cannot do that. But you should be able to have civil discourse if something's a good or a bad idea, especially when it comes to, how we treat things. So,
natural resources, public health, all the above. So please go, if you're listening to this now, go check out Captains for Clean Water, social media, on their website. Do a little, as always, we never tell people how to think. We do think this is a very concerning situation, but go do a little bit of reading and see what you think and then get involved from there. That is definitely a Florida issue that extends outside the bounds of Florida because it sets a precedent of if this becomes a thing here, where is this going to rear its ugly head otherwise? So a little bit of a tangent about water quality and freedom of speech. But we're going to kick this one off. And this is actually a really fun dynamic for me, Tony, because I've been on a whole lot of these podcasts. I'd say probably 85%+ of what we've put out of the almost 200 so far. And not too often have I not gotten a chance to meet or speak with the guests before we have them on.
True.
But how I was introduced to this guest was when I try as hard as I can to be involved in as many public meetings as I can, but I had some personal stuff pop up and couldn't attend one, and you gave me a call the next morning.
He made it to the finals in pickleball.
I wish.
Community pickleball court.
Yeah, exactly. The badminton championship. But no, I got a call from you, and you've been in a whole lot of these meetings, and normally you say, hey, this is what went down. They played this card, this piece of crap pulled this thing, whatever, and you called and you go, holy shit, was there a comment I have to tell you about? And that was how we got here. So I'm going to throw it over to you now for maybe a little bit more of an intro, and then I'm excited to learn about our guest and learn about and participate in this conversation basically at the same pace and level of introduction that our listeners are. So without further ado to you, Tony.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of times when we're in these hearings, you know, 50% of the people do a really good job and they state their case and their position in the time allotted. And then there's a big chunk of people who tell you their life story and don't get anywhere and just don't even pick a position.
Listen, and when my Uncle Nino started the deli back in 89, and that was before he divorced Lisa, I liked Lisa.
As soon as the price of prosciutto went up, I said, I'm buying a party boat. You know what I mean? And you're just like, what the fuck is happening? Like, you know what I mean? You're like, God in heaven. Like, what? You know, it's you feel like the last car in the carnival train with Lobster Boy and the Bearded Lady stumbled into the fisheries meeting, and you're just like, I don't even
or
know.
It's the final scene of Billy Madison where he's like, everyone who heard that is dumber for having listened to you.
You're
I award you no points.
No points, and we are all worse off for you speaking. Like, it's crazy. And then all of a sudden, like, you hear someone come on the mic, and you can tell from, like, the first three words that they're comfortable with public speaking, which is like the greatest phobia in the world, and some people just don't have it. And then they get through the first sentence and you're just like, oh shit, I hope this guy's on our side, because he's fixing to lay the lumber. I mean, that was my first thing. I was like, oh shit, they found someone for their team that can speak, you know. And then I heard a really eloquent, very supportive comment at the Rhode Island Albion Benito hearing. And just by hook or by crook, you know, it's a small world. And I know, you know, what's crazy, Cody, is I didn't tell you this, but, Eric from that Manga Bay, who did that great story with us a couple of months ago, He knew the fella that gave the testimony. Eric sent me Eric wrote a great article. He's a reporter. Wrote a great article about us. Really fair, awesome article. We appreciated it very much. And Eric just happened to know, be connected with our guest here. And our guest just went on a lark. But before I introduce him, I just want to say one thing. This is a totally regular person, run-of-the-mill. You'd be friends with them probably if you met them. You know, we all have fishing in common. And basically just saw this issue and said, you know what, I'm going to this thing. And heard a couple of the bad testimonies and just freestyled, wrote his testimony in the chair and pretty much delivered a 10 out of 10 really damning, you know, statement on like why these regulations are really needed. And my message to everyone that's listening is y'all can do this too. You know, I get it. It's a pain in the ass. It's 5 o'clock on a Tuesday, whatever. They always do it at the worst time possible. But the point here is like, if everyone just gave it a shot, I promise you fisheries would be in a better place. So our guest, Paul,
I think it would be funny if we just went the entire episode without actually introducing him. And he just sat here and listened to us gas him up. And then we said, well, have a nice day.
We're out of time. So I want to introduce our guest, Paul, and he's going to give us a little bit of his background, how he got to the meeting, how he stepped up to the mic. And I want y'all to listen to it. And I think you're going to identify with Paul, maybe to give you a little bit of courage to do the same thing. So, Paul, thanks for joining us. How you doing this
evening?
How's
everybody doing? Nice to talk to you guys. Yeah. My name's Paul Osimo. I heard about this meeting through your podcast. I'd heard sort of rumblings of, you know, some rules being, you know, put forward for Albies and Benito, and, you know, it kind of struck a chord with me. Being a a wreck charter boat guy for a lot of years, and co-captaining on boats and being a mate on boats, And I got my own little skiff now for my own personal use that I, you know, I get into trouble on my own. And yeah, it struck a chord with me. And I felt like I had to go and speak my piece. And at least I went just to listen, really. And when I heard some of these comments, you know, saying that, you know, oh, we don't know anything about, you know, we don't have any science on these on these animals, and we don't have any, you know, we don't have any information on these animals, so how can we make any rules? So let's ignore them like they don't exist. And that just infuriated me. And I started writing in my little sketchbook. and then I, you know, I gave my own little TED talk there during that meeting. So that's how it goes.
I love it. I definitely know that when you're walking up to the podium, you have those couple moments where the emotion and the fire takes over versus whatever you maybe had formally or informally prepared. And you look down and it's just like, it looks like a chicken scratch doctrine they'd find from like a serial killer's house after the next day. It's like you write down a stat and then you cross it out and then you write down something else. So I have been there and I know that feeling, and kudos to you for, you know, having the courage to do so. And this isn't just an hour just to gas you up specifically on that one comment, but also just about participating in the process. And it takes more courage than people realize. And Tony, it's funny, in the last 5-6 years, I've just seen, you know, some people who I've looked up to in the fishing industry who have traveled the world, accomplished all these incredible things that I wish I could accomplish a tenth of in the next 40, 50 years of my life. And when you take them to a meeting like this and you say, hey, you know, X, just go up and give a comment, man. Like, your voice is going to mean a lot. To some people, that is like climbing Mount. They'd rather climb Mount Everest barefoot. You know, so major kudos for showing up and participating.
Cody, you just brought back like two memories that's worth telling the audience and Paul. I remember us all sitting in that hotel lobby in Louisiana, in Baton Rouge, and all going over the testimony that we were fixing to give at the State House. I remember the night before, the girl who ran her car up on that concrete barrier, and we just stood there and looked out into the parking lot for like 5 minutes as she drugged the concrete barrier around the Holiday Inn parking lot in Baton Rouge. And I was just like, man, I'd help her, but like, I'm kind of scared she's gonna run me over. Like, I'm not sure what's going on here. And then, you know, reading that testimony, and then our buddy Blaine Chocolate comes to mind, because Blaine was like cold sweats, you know, literally the most famous person in fly fishing right now, like no question asked, like breaking out in hives to speak publicly. And then here's the funniest thing, you know, how many years ago was that? And now Blaine doesn't even flinch. He overcame, like, I never had the fear. He overcame the fear. There's something to be said for that.
And it's funny too, because like professionally, he's probably sat in front of 250 people. Everyone grab your bucktail now, and now we're going to wrap this. But just
hundreds,
speaking about something you're...
Hundreds of times.
Yeah.
Hundreds.
So funny. So funny. Well, no, that's awesome. And Paul, I'd love maybe give a little bit of a background, right? This is kind of fun because I'm asking these questions. You know, it's not like this is teed up. I'm genuinely curious. How involved have you been in fishery stuff leading up to this specific? Was this the first time you stepped to a mic? Have you done stuff in past years and participated? Give people a little bit of background on that.
Yeah, so for the past, I don't know, handful of years, I've actually been a professor. So speaking in front of a bunch of people is not really a big deal for me necessarily. And so, you know, I talk to like 20 kids a pop, four times a week, and, you know, waxing poetic about industrial design and product design and stuff like that. So it's not a huge deal for me, but it wasn't always easy, obviously. And, you know, I grew up working on fishing boats, talking to just tourists. I got the gift of gab, I feel like. And so, like, you know, talking to 90 people on a party boat, telling everyone to throw up over the side, please, and don't make me have to throw a bucket at you. You know, stuff like that. Yeah, I've been in. I don't mind talking in front of a bunch of people, but I've spoken, and you know, so like I'd say that that like you know, research or resource management has been a big deal for me, and the reason why this kind of like lit a fire under my ass is mostly because I grew up on the Cape, and I got a book at a tackle shop that said To Catch a Tuna, and that was written by a guy named Captain Alan Anderson. He was kind of a big shot charter boat captain here in Rhode Island. I think he was the IGFA rep here in Rhode Island for like 50 years or something like that. And years and years and years and years later, after I graduated college, an email comes across. I was a member of like the RISA email list, Rhode Island Saltwater Angler Association email list, and it was Captain Al asking to see if there were any competent mates that didn't mind getting yelled at a little bit, and that he was, you know, he had just had to let his last crew member go because they basically quit halfway through the trip because he was kind of a tough guy, and I was like, oh my God. This is a guy who I've been reading his like book since like forever. Since you know, I've worn the edges off of this book since I was like 11 years old. And you know, around 2004 or something like that, I jumped on that boat, the Prowler, with Captain Al. I had my my 50-ton captain ticket at that time, and I co-captained that boat. We did offshore fishing, and he is a gentleman who. He's been inducted into the IGFA Hall of Fame. He tagged and released 60,000 game fish. And according to what National Marine Fisheries Service, he's tagged more bluefin tuna than anyone in the world. I helped tag maybe around 10,000 of those game fish with Captain Al during my time working with him. And yeah, I've decorated a lot of fish and thrown them back, and that's always been fascinating to me. And you know, it's you know how many can we tag today? Oh man, it was just addictive, and that got me way into it. And you know, I was always like a nature kid, anyways. But that kind of you know actual participation. The fact that it was so easy and the fact that so much information was coming back with every recapture, I'm hooked and addicted. I'm still a member of the American Littoral Society. That was a lot of the inshore game fish tags that we used. I still have a bunch of National Marine Fisheries Service tags for when I go bluefin tuna fishing. And, you know, it's addictive. It's a drug for sure.
I love it. Well, if you're a teacher, then you definitely are in the, you're used to trying to talk very succinctly in an educated manner to a crowd of people that, you know, half of them are kind of half paying attention. So that's perfect in a lot of fisheries management meetings, depending on which state you're in. But no, that's awesome. I'm curious, where which tackle shop was it and where on the Cape did you grow up?
So I grew up in Craigville, in Barnstable, Craigville Village, and it was Sportsport. Sportsport was my hang, and we used to. I had a next door neighbor of mine who ended up working there as a youngster also, and you know we used to just like sit around the VHF and talk to the guys out fishing around and get all the hot spots and stuff like that.
So Paul, I grew up on Cape Cod. I grew up in Centerville in the 90s, and I used to wait for my dad to get home from working at the grocery store every day, and we would scramble to Sportsport, and just I would be as a kid hoping and praying that the old man in the yellow jacket was out in the boat in front, because that meant that they were still open. So really
yes,
cool,
sir.
Small, like, I mean, 20 by 20 tackle shop, but that was where my love of the ocean started as well. And I believe still woman owned. It's like been woman owned for like decades, which in the tackle industry is like, I don't know if it is one of, if not the only. I don't want to make any, chauvinistic assumptions, but like really, really cool spot, you know, very old school, very like, you pull out the tray of flies and pick it out and it says, 60 cents a piece or whatever. Very, very cool. So that was why I had to ask. But yes, that was my stomping grounds as well.
That's awesome. All right, fellow Cape Codder, rock and roll.
You were probably in there one day with your buddies, like, who's this snot-nosed kid who, like, won't shut up? Just give him his sea worms and get him out of here. So if you remember that kid, cut him a little slack. But, no, that's awesome. And maybe, Tony, if you don't want to just riff for 2 seconds and let people know if they're joining this episode and maybe out of the loop on new stuff for whatever reason, just what was on the table with that specific Albion Benito meeting and where things are going, that might be worth a 2 second policy
sure,
update
a
before
large,
we continue with Paul.
Yeah, a large contingent of recreational anglers and guides in Rhode Island basically went through the proper process, contacted the state, asked for this to be on the agenda. They have these recreational meetings every so often. So this appeared on the docket for the hearing. And then the next step, we had overwhelming support. The next step is there will be a public hearing sometime mid to late February. So it's going to come up here faster than we think. And I can tell you right now, been my experience in my life, that when you have an overwhelming amount of support, the next time you're going to have quite a few more detractors as well to combat our level of support. So the only thing I can say is we have yet begun to fight. You know, that we're going to double down, triple down on everything. We're going to pile that meeting full of people. We're going to be polite, courteous, and say the same message. And just, you know, there's already a contingent of, you know, the typical cast of characters who are making up falsehoods about our position. And we're not looking for daily limits on commercial fishing. It's more of a cap of an average of the last 3 to 5 years of harvest. That's all it is. One of the guys, Paul can back me up on this, but one of the guys said, well, why would we want this? What if we want to open up a trawl fishery in a few years? And you're like, that's exactly why we're doing this. Like, make no bones about it. Like, what you just said proved that we are right. Oh, you want to open up a trawl fishery? Well, you're not going to be able to. And sorry, but you can keep doing what you're doing, but you can't do any more. And
hey, if you limit exploitation of this resource, how am I supposed to exploit the resource?
Next thing you know, cyanide in the water is going to be illegals. Like, what the fuck? Yeah, Jesus. Like, you know, in any event, it's just a 5-fish limit, a 3-fish limit, you know, that could go to 5. It's just guardrails. It's not anyone's life. And anyone who has any functioning activity between their ears will understand that this actually will benefit everyone. Everyone. You can keep, the commercial sector can keep catching as many as they've been catching for the last 3 or 5 years. You know the price on them is going to go up. So you don't have to worry about that. You're going to make more money for what you're catching anyway. And, you know, a 6-pack boat can keep 30 Bonito or 30 Albies. Or, you know, if it goes to 5 fish, Christ. Or if it goes to, yeah, if it's 5, 6, that's 30. If it's 3, you know, you're looking at 18 for, who the hell needs more than 18 Bonito? Like, are you kidding? You can't do anything with them after. Anyway, y'all have heard all this before. But anyway, they're basically saying everything that's not true, which is on brand. You know, we're trying to ban commercial fishing. We're trying to, you know, destroy their livelihoods. I should be able to, we ain't got no science. Let me kill them all. So in any event, here we are. They're already lying about us. That's normal. They're going to, you know, big pushback at this public hearing. And we're going to need everyone on God's green earth to rally and support this, because we got to take this to other states. So
we need 100 more Pauls. We need a duplicate Paul at some point.
So that's the policy side of it. That's where we're at.
Yeah, and right. So remind me, obviously, I did not get to listen and so far have not been able to procure the audio from that meeting. But if I remember correctly, Tony, you said that Paul talked and went through a little bit of the history of some
yeah,
of the
I mean, dude, Paul, if you've got your notes, or you can
I can read it for
freestyle
you.
Freestyle again. Yeah. So, yeah. Y'all, drum roll.
This,
I got my chicken scratch right here.
This was the best surprise I've gotten in I don't know how long. Paul,
leave out all the four-letter words.
Take it
so
away.
You don't get sued.
I didn't even put in any four-letter words, which is I'm amazed at myself, actually. Kudos to me. Yeah. Let me read it for you. So it starts. Where is? Oh yeah, right. To those of you who obviously oppose this, I offer historical precedent. In New England, a lack of fisheries regulation has never resulted in a positive outcome. I think about the winter whiting that used to be able to pluck from the shore break in Barrington Beach by lamplight at night in the winter times around here. They're long gone. I think about the Atlantic halibut, the original ground fishery when New England was first colonized, completely destroyed. Glimmers of a return only like now, in like the past 10 years or so. Codfish as a target species was the second choice around here, oddly enough. That's wild to me. The coastal pollock and cod fishery caught trolling wire in the early spring before the stripers arrived down south in Rhode Island, and then accessible from our southern shore during the winter months, completely erased. Gone forever. My winters are now needlessly boring. Swordfish could be harpooned and white marlin could be trolled within view of the cottages off of Matunuck Beach. Long lines killed them in the 70s and in the early 80s. During my childhood, catching a striper was like seeing a unicorn. And by some miracle, they survived that collapse only to find themselves in dire straits once again. Bluefish, once the unsung hero and official ass saver of every charter boat and fishing guide on the Northeast coast, is now harder and harder to find. As I mentioned earlier, access to these two species is increasing quickly. I've caught them in the shadow of the Providence skyline all the way up Narragansett Bay, where they now visit often over the past several years. They now also regularly travel up around the Cape into Cape Cod Bay, where they're also targeted by an entirely new and numerous group of anglers, like on the often. The days of treating coastal migratory fisheries like it's the Wild West is over in my eyes. The fact that I never had an opportunity to enjoy the now non-existent fisheries that I mentioned just now disgusts me to no end. To have this fishery wiped away like many before would be nothing short of a crime. That's what I said, and then I dropped my mic. There was no mic. I just dropped my pen.
That's amazing. I love it. I love it. I love it as a comment. And also, I know too, because I've done kind of similar where I've read a comment after whatever, it never has the same fire. Because I know that was already a great comment right there. But when you have the steam coming out of your ears and you're walking up there like you're about to, you know, Mel Gibson something at the all of a sudden things change really quickly. So I love it. And Tony, we've talked about this in the past. This is like such a great model for some of the resources we've made for our advocates, our followers, whether you agree with us or not, about like how to give a comment, and so the ability to come up and tell a story and give a personal sentiment, that was a real human approach. It wasn't, well, Uncle Nino told me to come down here, so all of our cousins are here and we're here to say. And it also wasn't someone that just went up and said, hi, ASGA says that 5 is better than 2, so thank you. You know, that was a real human, and that's the way, theoretically, life doesn't always work this way, but that's the way these processes are supposed to work. These are supposed to be state level, fed level, whatever it is, these commissions, people who work for the public interest and are supposed to represent individuals and businesses that our public have built and that these natural resources support. So when you hear a comment like Paul's, I think it sinks a lot deeper than some of these other ones, or like, you know, a form letter, right? Where we spam in another thing that says, hi, insert your name here. Oh, sorry, I'm Cody. I would like to say, I mean, kudos and what a great example for this process and how people can whether or not you have the experience and all the tagging and the years, you know, orating to the youth that Paul does or not, you know, this is a template for public comment 101, in my opinion.
Now you know why I got so excited by the whole thing. I mean, you know, you sit there and you listen to somebody clearly knows what they're talking about, and you know, we can quote the science like you said, and I'll go toe to toe with anyone, but when you hear an actual living human being on there talking about what they've lost, what they'll never experience, what their children will never experience, and you just kind of look at somebody and like, you're going to make the same mistake again? Because like, first time, you know, shame on you. Second time, shame on me. At this point, it's almost criminal. It's just, amen. It's almost criminal. Like what you have overseen and what we have lost is unbelievable. The fact that stuff is even still around is a testament. Oh, it's a testament to just Mother Nature's prowess, you know. It really is, and it's wild. It's unbelievable to me that anyone left is okay with a fish with no management. Two important species, just no management. I heard the craziest thing today, and I must share it with y'all.
I don't know where this is going. Can you timestamp this one for me? I might have to chop this.
Yeah. So, no, hold on one second. Let me hit it. Okay, I marked it. So, I shit you not. Somebody just told me that there is now a small mesh trawl fishery around Gardner's Bay for mantis shrimp. So it gets worse. So
let me guess, it doesn't just catch mantis shrimp.
Right, yeah, because small mesh is, yeah. Well, it's even worse than that. So mantis shrimp stay in their burrows all day. And all they do is fan their eggs. So like a mantis shrimp isn't like a white shrimp or a brown shrimp or a grass shrimp where like they hold the eggs like with their back legs. They keep the eggs in the burrows and they fan the eggs nonstop, and they only leave the burrow to eat at night. So these guys, there's now a small mesh trawl fishery in the spring around Gardner's Island in Long Island for frickin' mantis shrimp. So, you know, you think about that and you're like, that must be like catastrophic. Bycatch, because what eats mantis shrimp? Summer flounder, stripers, you know, anything. I mean, it's a shrimp. So
I can't wait to be at my favorite local New Jersey deli and get Anthony's mantis shrimp mozzarella pizza.
Mantis shrimp mozzarella. Hey, prosciutto wrapped mantis shrimp.
We have an Italian listener somewhere who's like, what the hell
no,
is this?
No, dude, name is Tony. I'm half Italian. Like, I'm allowed to do this. So
my mother's maiden name's La Rosa, so I get the pass.
I'm three quarters Italian. I approve this message.
See?
Perfect. All right, we're good. We're
Look,
clear.
As, a, three as, three. As a people, we appreciate good ball busting. Like, it's not, if you don't, so, hey, dude, no Karens allowed in the Italian culture. Trust me when I tell you, you gotta have bulletproof skin.
Ooh, I do have a good guide story. One time I used the word Karen a bunch of different times in that very, you know, cliche internet meme derogatory term. And then about three quarters of the way through the trip, the gentleman was like, yeah, my wife Karen. And I was like, oh, I've dropped this one a couple times. But at that point, there's no going back. There is a certain point where you reach a joke where you're like, you just gotta own it, unfortunately.
Gotta surf that wave, man. Yeah.
Gotta let it ride at that point. So, there's no going back.
So in all seriousness, think about a small mesh trawl fishery at night in relatively shallow water on sandy bottom for mantis shrimp. And I bring this up because, like, I listened, you know, Paul, you were in that meeting. Cody wasn't. They were talking about, you know, the burgeoning market for cunners.
Oh my God. I couldn't, I, Yeah, the game fish of the future.
Yeah. And like here, you look at some of the netters here, and it's puffer fishing. We call them blow toads and ribbon fish. Ribbon fish. Ribbon fish. They're getting like good money for ribbon fish. And it just kind of, you know, when you rolled through everything that we've lost, now they're catching cunners or bergalls, whatever you want to call them. They're catching mantis shrimp. There's a market for sea robin in New York. I know that. And at a certain point, anyone who calls us stupid for trying to cap any emerging commercial fishery for Atlantic Bonito and albacore, one of two things: you're dumb or you don't know what's going on in the world, because there's a small mesh mantis shrimp fishery in Long Island Sound.
By gotta start the mantis project. We're gonna tag
please
them.
Don't even you're gonna give me a tags you're gonna give me a stroke burrows. Dude, can you imagine? It's the acoustic tag would be like the size of a grain of rice, man. You know what I mean? Like, look, oh my God, he crawled past the thing. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't even know anymore. And that was a big topic of discussion at the Rhode Island meeting, Paul. Like, you're a little bit younger than me. Wrong. Cody's a little bit younger than both of us. If somebody told me 20 years ago that there'd be a bergal cunner fishery, sea robin fishery, and a mantis shrimp fishery, I would just laughed at them. I don't know.
Well, yeah, the thing that struck me about that conversation was that, so like the gentleman who was talking about, like, I got to think ahead. You know, I have to think like three steps ahead, and you know, I got to worry about, like, you know, traps for bergal or cunner or sea robins and stuff like that. So it's like, and that guy wasn't exactly pro what we were there for, and still the writing is on the wall. He's worrying about, you know, having to literally scrape the bottom, right? And like, what do you think you're talking about right now, bud? Like, yeah, it's like we're on a race to the bottom.
If we get to that point where all the major ones are so close to rock bottom that we've transitioned over, I mean, one, what when those get to rock bottom, is the ocean just empty? And it's funny, it's incredible that we crossed paths through my childhood tackle shop. Like, and, you know, we've never talked before this, which is amazing. But like, makes me think back to, if we don't make these changes now, where is the next young Cody who comes through Sportsport? Like, I was growing up in the late 90s, right? So I was on the backside of progress for striped bass. So my youth and my entire career and my profession as a guide, my studies as a marine biologist, I owe them all to the small striped bass blitzes off the jetties, where there was just endless schoolies. And we had a bunch of little snapper blues as well. So I'd go buy the little snapper blue rig, the little egg weight with a little fly off the back. But if everyone, it's really funny, like some people just want to catch big fish, some people want to catch a lot of fish. We're coming down the stages of angling experience and angling preference, where it's just like wanting to catch a fish is going to become the standard if we don't have anything left. And like, how do the businesses built upon this? This is not just saying, well, we need enough fish so that guides can keep guiding. The Guides Association is not solely a guide oriented and representation or representative group. This is the entire industry. It's the hotels, it's the red jacket on the Cape, and the reason why people come down to stay for a weekend and they stop in at Sportsport and, you know, buy some stuff so they can go fish for stripers off the jetty for a night, or under the fireworks on 4th of July, or all the different things. You know, if we're just running down to literal zero, and I can't even imagine. I haven't seen, you talked about the age tiers, Tony, and I'm only bringing that up because you brought it up first. But you were around during the Revolutionary War when things were really good. And then, that was another joke. But I can't imagine the fact that, like, I have seen things downtrend just in my half the lifetime, essentially, that you guys, like, you guys saw it hit rock bottom and then come back up. And the idea, at least with striped bass, that we are reliving this again, it's, I mean, it's legitimate blasphemy. And so as we trend down this narrow path and we're running out of room and it's becoming a tightrope, the other guys are more important than ever. We just need something to fish for, something to catch. We just need something to eat, too. This is not a catch and release, fly only, poke them, kiss them, and let them go. What if people just want to keep something for the table? Well, they should have bonito blitzes around so they can keep two, you know, take them home and prepare them right away. Fish doesn't, they don't really freeze too great, but, you know, they should have the opportunity to have fresh fish for the table. And doesn't apply so much with Albies, but we're just running out of options. And so if like, are we going to have kids one day going to Sportsport to say, I'm just hoping to whack the sea robins. It's the last thing left. You know, it's kind of hard to comprehend.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to the, you know, sight fishing for sea robins on the flats. That's going to be just what a fishery that'll be.
I think the On the Water guys had like a little bit of a satirical, I can't remember if it was a video or just a blog or a, you know, article feature or whatever, but like they kind of had the joke going for a little bit about, you know, the sea robin, you know, being a game fish or whatever. But here's the reality. I mean, down here, people don't care about Albies in Florida, East Coast of Florida, for anyone who doesn't know. They don't care about Albies because there's 735 other things to catch. So it's irritating with a thing that I don't really want to catch and I can't eat. Bites. There's nothing to lose in New England. There's like a dozen options maximum to begin with.
And it's like, talk about like, yeah, like New England has a problem and it's called seasons, right? Like, you know, there's certain things around, like those 12 fish aren't around all at the same time. So like your options are severely limited. Like, you know, then you have the doldrums, like in the middle of the summer, like stuff gets hard to catch around here. And like, you know, you have to go. I really look forward to fly fishing the flats for chogies and sea robins and needlefish. Yeah.
When you're watching everything get fished down the food chain and it's right there, it's reality for everyone. I mean, it's right in front of our faces. We see it. We can document it. They're fishing for stuff they never would have, there wasn't a market, they never would have considered it years ago, and now there's a market because there's nothing else. And then we're crazy for suggesting regulations on fish that don't have a regulation? Like, is that, are you kidding me? Like, is that a joke? I don't, like, you know, again, it's like, am I taking crazy pills? Like, you're talking about these fisheries that no one on earth would have even tried to exploit. And then we're crazy for putting regulations on a fishery that we don't want exploited, that's semi-stable, when it's happening all around us. And we're the crazy ones. And the managers don't have the spine of a moon jellyfish. If anybody yells at them, they just cower in the corner and they're like, stop yelling. I'll do whatever you want.
And that'll probably be our next sight fishery is moon jellyfish.
Right. Well, I'm here to tell you, if that's what moves the needle, we're fixing to put the fear of God in you. It's not going to be one person yelling at you. Like, we will systematically, methodically drive you nuts if you don't do the right thing. Because apparently, that's all, like I said, that's the only thing that moves the needle. It's not common sense. It's not logic. It's not doing the right thing. It's not listening to science. It's, I don't want to be yelled at. Message received. And boy, like, are you picking with the wrong people this time? Not just a bunch of chuckleheads who can't form a sentence. Like, actually smart, weaponized idealists who can, like, methodically pick you apart bone by bone. So welcome to the big show.
That can be one of the reasons where people like Paul, you feel so fired up, is because you're sitting there watching, try to say this the best way, but people who they're not coming to the table in an appropriate way. Like, the game isn't being played well. It's not that someone thinks, views the world differently than you, or even has different, you know, business or family or financial priorities, and they look at the life through a different lens. It's people that are literally just bogging the system down with nothing close to anything of a formal sentence, right? Or a logical approach to how they might have gotten to the other side of the table. And I know that's why it fires people up, and kudos to Paul for not throwing the four letter words in there and getting through that. But I mean, that fire, we get these emails, calls, whatever. We check in with various people that are connected to decisions after, and this is not just related specifically to this, you know, Albion Benito situation or Striped Bass, but, you know, you talk to people after, and it's really heartwarming, Tony. And I know you always share this to me when it pops up in your world, is when you hear, like, man, the people that came to speak on your behalf, how well-spoken they were, how respectful they were, how they really brought their A game when it came to their preparation and orating, how they feel in an educated manner. And so, kudos not only to Paul, but everyone that's done that. And I'm sure there were other great comments at that meeting that I was unfortunately unable to attend. But there's still something to be said for holding the line when it comes to having an educated and thoughtful approach and playing the game the way the game should be. And my sincerest appreciation for those who do.
I'd like to say that, yeah, like, I think the word for what the people that were commenting before me and kind of got my blood boiling a little bit, I think the word is they were just being disingenuous. They weren't talking about real things. They were, you know, stretching truths, and, you know, I would call these alternate facts that they were inserting into this conversation. And like I said, like, I went there to sit and listen and to see if I couldn't provide some type of support. I didn't go in there expecting to, you know, get so ticked off that I, you know, wrote a freaking, you know, several page long paragraph about, you know, the fisheries that all these old timers that I used to work for on all the boats in Hyannis used to tell me about and wax poetic about. And I wasn't expecting to do it, and I'm glad that, well, I can't say that I'm glad that they ticked me off so much, but I'm glad I was able to say my piece.
Yeah, and that's important too. Like you talked about, you know, speaking on behalf of what came before you and what had already declined or was in the process of declining as you came up with your fisheries, and that's really important, Paul, because for someone like myself, there's a lot of guys my age who are really, and gals who are really interested in this stuff and want to get more involved, and they love fishing. You know, we only know what we know. If you're 30 and under, you only know the last 30 years of fisheries and what it has and hasn't been. And so you can speak on what you feel and you can do your research to try to get a better understanding of it. But if we lose those generational gaps between personal experiences of how things have declined, it not only are we losing a piece of history, but you're losing ammo that could drive real progress. Because it's not a big deal if something slips away, if it's not within the context of that everything else has already slipped away. We only had 10 things and we lost 5, and now we're about to lose the 6. That sounds way worse than we've only had 5 things and we're about to lose the first one. And so we really need to try to bridge that gap. And I hope many who are younger, whether you're, you know, we have some listeners who are like teenagers, which are really awesome. We'll go to like a tournament and they're like, is that Tony? I love that guy. And normally it's like, is that Tony? I'm going to kill him. You know, so it's cool. You know, oh, we love episode whatever, and dish out a bunch of hats, which is really cool. But, you know, all of our younger listeners, 30 and under, like, we need to own that responsibility of appreciating history and digesting it and hearing these tales and also empowering. I think sometimes for, I'm going to say older, and you guys are going to get really offended, but like anyone who has experienced 4, 5, 6, 7 decades, sometimes it could be exhausting. You know, I see this a lot in the clean water advocacy in Florida too, which is like, man, we've been fighting forever. I'm effing done with this. I'm in Florida now and I'm just going to retire and ride the line. But if those voices don't speak up, whether it's from their own experience or for the people who came before you and your mentors, we lose that gap in time. And that is so much ammunition, respect, tenure, experience that adds to a really compelling, you know, campaign about why things should change for the better. So, you know, to our younger listeners, tap in, listen, ask a lot of questions. I try my best to do the same, and then also carry on and speak on behalf of, you know, you don't have to be 80 years old and have lived the last 80 years of fishing in New England or the East Coast to have an idea on this. You can just say, this is what I see now, and this is my expectation for what I want going forward in years. And that's
dude, I think a great message is a young person coming up and being like, look, I hear stories of the old days and I don't believe it. This is my normal, and I wish it could get better. And I'd love to be able to tell those stories. And why are you guys going to vote the wrong way and deny me that future? You know, it's you got the reins now. What do you want to leave me? Yeah, I think that's it for a young person, man. I think that's devastating, like shot to the heart. Mm-hmm. Like, why'd you even get in this business? What'd you do it for? Why? Couldn't get a PhD in physics? Like, sorry, not sorry.
That acting career and singing career didn't take off.
You know what we call Capitol Hill, Paul, don't you? It's ugly person Hollywood.
Everybody
who wanted to be a rock star. You're being kind. Everybody who wanted to be a rock star and Brad Pitt and couldn't quite make it, so they decided to run for office. Yeah. Ugly people's Hollywood, man.
The land of loafers.
The land of loafers.
Yeah.
It's got. Are you talking about the shoes, or that is a descriptive term?
I'll leave that open to interpretation.
I need clarity on that. Could you break out the thesaurus? So you know, Paul, we kind of skipped over it a little bit, but you got a 50-ton license. Like, you weren't just, like, gaff that fluke, sir. Like, you got a 50-ton license, right?
Yeah, I had that. I got it in 2004, and I had it for, a decade or so, and I let it lapse because I wasn't able to, I had to go on to other things. Had a kid, started a family, and you know, up here, it didn't seem like I was going to be able to make the money in the fishing game that was going to help support my family. So, which is sad, but you know, I still got my finger on the pulse. It's still important to me, wildly important to me.
You could have got into the illegal sale of commercially harvested dry bass. We'd have made a lot of money.
Was I
not on mute for that one?
If he had known the Cunner fishery was going to develop, Katie,
I was thinking about getting a jet ski and you know, putting an igloo on the back. And,
so Paul,
you know,
Paul, tell people about that, because you are there, you live there. Yeah. Cody and I don't. We just hear reports. So tell them about the Hell's Angels,
the motorcycle
jet ski. Yeah.
Yeah. It was basically like, you know, an unknown number of these jet skis plying the waters of like Buzzard Bay, Narragansett Bay, wherever the, you know, off of Saconic Point and stuff like that. And I think they even were south of Narragansett Bay at some point. And they were just going around to the seagulls and all the birds working and just, you know, run and gun fishing and filling up coolers with both bonito and false albacore, if I'm not mistaken, which is kind of a wild thing to cull. And yeah, bring them back to some mysterious mothership, and this stuff would end up at the farmers markets and stuff like that. I think being sold as like just being sold as tuna. Like, I think that like that was part of like the thing that like raised the eyebrow, because it's fraud. It's like, you know, well, is false albacore tuna? Yes, technically, yes, it is. But is that the tuna that
there's some jet ski gang listener here. He's like, hey, I might have been illegally catching albies on jet skis and running them to the local farmer's market, but I did not call them a tuna. I know they're a mackerel.
wrong accent, but you can keep rolling. We won't get into it. We won't get. We're not gonna do an accent competition. I think that's even one that's step too canceled. Far for us. Yeah.
Cody was a great host, but never made it to episode 200. Yeah, they finally canceled it at 196.
I think I'm gonna push up my glasses here. Technically, I believe the green bonito, the one with the stripes going this way, are technically mackerel, and then the wavy line ones, the little tunny, the false albacore, or you call bonita down south, those are technically a tuna, if I'm not mistaken. I'm no ichthyologist, but
hey,
yeah, no one knows the difference around here anyway, so what the hell.
Well,
once they're filleted on ice, baby, they're wherever you want them to be.
Look, dude, I walk into my grocery store and I go to the seafood aisle, and Cody, how many pictures have I sent you that's like, I can't have this conversation with the guy behind the counter. But it's a vermilion snapper, and it's labeled as a red snapper. And I'm sitting there looking at it, and I'm like, that's not a red snapper. And I'm just like, don't say it. Don't say it. Just keep
walking. Do you remember
what
I sent you when I drove up to New England last fall, and I drove back through? We stopped in Maryland at a little like market on the side of the road. And I can't remember. What did I send
you?
Dude,
you sent me a picture of
like a wild striped bass.
A 14-inch hybrid striped bass in a vacuum sealed Ziploc bag.
Yeah.
And it said wild striped bass. And I was like,
striper. And I'm like,
Cody, just no more pictures, please.
Local to where?
Yeah.
The Mediterranean.
Dude, it was one of those things, man.
Local to a fish farm in Mexico.
Yeah. I walk by and I get like a Tourette's, and I'm like, not a vermilion snapper, not red vermilion, not red snapper. You know, I just can't do it. But
sorry, that's our Uncle Tony. He's got problems. But yeah, just let him. Yeah. He yells fish.
But you know, the point here is like, this was not a one-off occurrence with this motor. This has been going on for years. And like one of our best advocate guides has had multiple run-ins with them. And this guy wouldn't hurt a baby bunny. He's one of the most level-headed human beings. And he's not, I didn't say level-headed guides, because that's a different statement. Level-headed human beings on the planet. And he's had horrific experiences with these people. And they were all over Massachusetts until Massachusetts dropped the regulations and curtailed it. So what did they do? They jumped over to Rhode Island. So is Rhode Island going to protect their fishery from this insanity? I mean, there's no enforcement, and even if there was enforcement, right now, legally, they could go out and kill 100 bonito. 1,000. And it's perfectly legal. So, yeah, we're nuts. We've lost our minds for pushing for regulations. We're just fish huggers, right? I guess.
So I'm curious to top to a more positive tone, and also just more of a recreational tone. Paul, when you look at 2026, what does your fishing calendar look like? I mean, what do you look forward to? Obviously, life's a little bit different now. You have the family and everything, not doing it professionally. But
so,
what is your 26 look like as far as what you look forward to? What, you know, maybe any many destination trips or whatever, but also locally. How does a good year of fishing for you locally, how will it play out?
Oh man. So like, starting in like, April, May, we have the fish starting to come in, the bigger fish, the sea run fish come back into the bay, and you start to be able to catch them on some of like the shallower flats and stuff like that. I'm a sight fishing hound myself. But like, actually, it's kind of funny. Providence is one of those funny places where right here in the where the Providence River kind of comes up into the city, we have an overwinter run of striped bass. And they're all like 17-inch to like keeper-sized fish that kind of like lounge around and hang around in the river up here. And there's another population of those up in the Thames River in Connecticut, around Groton and New London. And man, that's like, those are some of the ones that we used to just tag and release all winter long. That's, how do you think Captain L got those tagging numbers up? Captive audience. But yeah, man. But when the bigger fish come in like the, like, you know, May, and then I got my little 14-foot Carolina skiff, and I'll chase those things around. And then, you know, summer hits, and I'll trailer that thing over to the Cape, and I'll go into Cape Cod Bay, and I'll start sight fishing on the, you know, around like Sandy Neck and stuff like that. That's one of my favorite things to do. Just like catching like 36 to 40 inch striped bass in like, you know, a foot of water. Absolutely bananas. It's just, it's, man, putting my, like, it, I go up there because it's like suddenly becoming like part of like a National Geographic, like, you know, ocean documentary. It's just incredible. I'm in it for like the dopamine hit and just like the visuals, guys. And then, you know, if, I mean, over the past like several years, not in the past, like, you know, a couple of years though, there was like, down in Craigville, Centerville, Nantucket Sound, there was an incredible run a bunch of years in a row of these king mackerel. What the heck? And you'd see them like jump out of the water like a torpedo, like, you know, like missiles being shot out of like a nuclear sub. Absolutely bananas, unprecedented. And that happened for like a bunch of years. So like, you know, the water's changing. It's wild around here now. But that happened in like July or so. If you want to catch a brown shark, my God, those things come around. Those are fun to tag and release. I don't mind doing that. Then like, you know, end of July, August, you got your bones and your albies and to tog. And then around August, when it opens back up, I jump in the water and I'm a spearfish too. And if it's too cold in the springtime, maybe I will, maybe I won't. But definitely in the summertime, and man, Southern Rhode Island is just when the visibility is right. I can't think of a better thing to do. Just swim around.
Paul, how could you? This is a catch and release, fly fairy only. How could you, Paul? Know your audience.
Well, here's my argument. I'm able to very easily ascertain the biggest fish out of a group of fish pretty easily, especially because tautog are pretty dumb and they'll just swim right up to you and just try to commit suicide. I call them sea turkeys. They're just dumb idiots, but they're really good on a grill, so I don't feel bad. But you know,
I do like tog. Yeah. Very tasty.
Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Those stupid grins. But yeah.
Very tasty. No, we need to fit into our box. They're calling us a bunch of fly release only guys, so we're just a bunch of fish huggers, so can't talk about the fact that you enjoy catching seafood and prefer to bring it home to your family. Not allowed. You're breaking the rules, Paul.
I will do any type of
fishing.
You know
what the funniest thing is? The people that
catch a fish.
Cody, the people who call us that, like, not a one of them's ever met me. You know? I mean, like, it'd be pretty funny if, like, we were sitting at a table and they went off and I was like, yeah, I'm the president. Like, what were you saying? I've probably eaten like 90% of the mammals that walk in North America. Like, I mean, it's, I don't know. Like, I don't even know what to say. It's so patently absurd. Like, I'm sorry, you know, we think about the future, you think about today. And that's pretty much what it comes down to. And you can't beat us policy-wise, so you just say stupid stuff like that over and over again until some of your mouth-breathing idiot friends believe it. And that's pretty much what we deal with.
It's never been a more difficult political climate to be somewhere in the middle, right? I mean, the reality is that how dare you be thoughtful and have a nuanced opinion that doesn't fit just one of two labels that could be put on you on any topic? And that's one of the difficult things that we deal with, but why we refuse to quit, right? Like, we're don't be afraid of the nuance. It's all right to keep fish, love to bring something home for your table. It's okay to like to release certain ones. You can have your preference on which fish you do like to fish for, which ones you don't like to fish for, and how you want to fish for them, as long as you're doing it all legally. But the reality is it's okay to be thoughtful, no matter how your little preference sheet for all those species.
Well, I mean, Cody, I'll take it. You know, Paul probably can understand this with the variety of stuff that he does. I think when you get right down to it, the reality is all that we want is for fish to be managed for the benefit of the people who are fishing for them the most. So, I mean, I'm not sticking my nose in, you know, too much with black sea bass or, you know, other food fish, demersal species. Like, why are you sticking your nose into the stuff that matters to us? Like, I'm kind of letting you create your own future with black sea bass. You know, cause our people don't, that's not necessarily their primary target. So if that's the way you want it, you know, you want a 12 inch minimum and a 15 inch creel limit in some place, like, okay, go for it. See how that works out for you. But these fish are, we're the ones who are pursuing them. They're our wheelhouse. And we're not saying you can't kill them. We're just saying you can't kill all of them like you've done with everything else. And I don't see how that, to me, that's the furthest thing from crazy I ever heard. It's logical. And it's a logical position.
Kind of wild to me that, like, yeah, there's like sort of like, you know, there's the two ends of the spectrum where there's, you know, yeah, like conservation, resource management, or just caring about it at all. And then on the other end, it's like, yeah, you know, hunt the last buffalo, kill the last unicorn. And yeah, being anywhere towards the middle or towards the conservation size seems like, you know, yeah, like you're not a real fisherman. You're not a professional. You're just, yeah, some hippie, crunchy Birkenstock wearing tree hugger. And yeah, I don't.
Tony's a big Birkenstock.
It's such an absurd. It's just an absurd narrative. It's an absurd narrative, and it's untrue and unreal. And I like that's what they want us to think. That's what they want everyone to think. And it makes it hard to move the ball forward.
Paul, do you have a message to anyone who's listening to this and is like, well, hold on a minute, I kind of like this guy, Paul. Maybe I can do this too. You know, as a professor, as all the other, as a ex-captain, if someone is listening to this and they're considering participating in that upcoming public hearing in Rhode Island, what encouragement and advice would you give them before we pull the plug on this podcast?
No one is going to care for you. If you care about something, you've got to sort of motivate yourself to put yourself in a position to tell the people that are important that you want to have know that you think something is important. You need to tell them that you care. So get yourself to a forum, get yourself into a position where you can, you know, at least try to get more information about it. That's why I was there. I didn't go prepared. I came with a pen and a paper just in case. Put yourself in a position to tell someone that you care about something. In this case, fisheries resource management, but whatever. No one's going to talk on your behalf. No one's a mind reader. And now's, you know, I don't know if you've noticed the climate in the world. It's important to speak what you think is right. So you should do it. But that's just my little opinion.
I don't know. I don't think that was a little old opinion. I think that was a badass close, Tony.
And yeah, no, totally. And the more often you do it, the better you get at it, just like anything else in the world.
Rip off the Band-Aid. Go talk in front of a bunch of people.
If you hear someone give an awesome testimony, they've done it before and they probably practiced. And all you have to do is just do it a couple of times and you'll find your groove. You'll overcome that fear. And you know, you'll become a great advocate and you'll feel better about things because at least you tried to make a difference. So Paul, we can't thank you. Can't thank Eric enough for helping, you know, talk to you about the meeting and what was going on. He shot me an email. Can't thank you enough for going up there and scratching down testimony. Would ask you moving forward, you know, when that public hearing comes up there in the middle of February, end of February, get as many people as you like to fish with or know to pack that room, because believe me, they're going to be doing the same thing.
Hit up your jet ski group chat. I know you're in that one.
Hit up the jet ski group chat. You know, and let's take this one over the goal line for all the people in Rhode Island and Massachusetts and everything else that don't want to see yet another fishery fade away into a memory. So from all of us, Paul, we cannot thank you enough for hopping on this podcast, for kind of sticking your head up and saying, oh, you know, if not me, then who, right? I mean, that's pretty much what happened. And boy, do we need a lot more Pauls in the world. So, Cody, I guess we're going to wrap this one up. You know, I think, Cody, I haven't talked to you about this, but, you know, just kind of tease to the listeners. I think with this, you know, while Paul was talking, maybe we can do some kind of quick training session or something to get people ready for this comment period in February, to really, really turn some great comments, great advocates out. But that'll, you know, maybe that'll be the next one.
Yeah, I love it. I'm all in.
All right. Thank you guys. As always, thank you for listening.
Thank you, Paul. Of course.
We will see all of y'all on the next guidepost.